Thank you for tuning in. Eleanor Roosevelt will be joining us on the show as we continue to interview America's most fascinating women.
Hello, listeners. I'm glad to be here.
Hello, Eleanor, and thank you for being here today. It's great to have you on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood? When and where were you born?
I'd love to, although it wasn't very happy. The name my parents gave me when I was born was actually Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, and my mother's name was also Anna. My father, Elliot Roosevelt, was the younger brother of Theodore Roosevelt. I was born on October 11th, 1884.
What was your childhood like? Did you grow up in New York?
I was a pretty shy child, a little awkward, actually. I had to wear a brace because I had a curved spine. I also had an overbite, and I was very tall for my age. My mother tried hard to bring me up well so that my manners could compensate for my looks, but her efforts only made me more keenly conscious of my shortcomings. However, with my father, I was perfectly happy. He was the one great love of my life as a child, and in fact, like many children, I have lived a dream life with him, so his memory is still a vivid living thing to me. My mother died of diphtheria in 1892 when I was just a child, and my dad passed away 2 years later. My father was an alcoholic through all of my childhood, and it eventually cost him his life. After my parents died, I ended up living with my grandmother.
While living with your grandmother, did you go to public school? What was your schooling like?
I did not attend public schools. I was tutored at my grandmother's home. I loved to read, though, and I would often hide books under my mattress at night. However, when I was 15, my grandmother sent me to a boarding school outside of London called Allensworth. This was the first time I experienced a formal education.
Did you like going to boarding school? Did you have any teachers you especially liked?
My years at Allensworth were the happiest 3 years of my life. It was there that I developed my interest in philosophy and politics. These were both thought to be men's topics, though, but I thoroughly enjoyed them. I was also introduced to Mademoiselle Silvestre, one of the most important and influential people of my life at Allensworth. I traveled with her in the summer and saw for the first time immigrants in poverty. This greatly affected my life.
What did you do after you left Allenswood?
After Allenswood, I moved back in with my grandmother. I joined an organization called the Junior League, which helped fundraise events to help the poor. I enjoyed my volunteer work, but I wanted to find a way to help even more.
Did you find a way to help more?
Yes. I was assigned to teach a little girl in a settlement house. At first, the dirty streets, crowded with foreign-looking people, filled me with terror, but the children interest me enormously. Working with these children caused me to join the Consumers League. This was an organization that advocated for better working conditions for women. I was very unaccustomed to women working, but I wanted to help them. I felt a sense of duty to help these people. Visiting the factories and sweatshops where the women and children were working gave me a great deal of knowledge on some of the less agreeable sides of life.
You were about 19 at this time. Were you dating anyone?
Yes, I was. But dating was much different back then. It was much more formal and stiff. It was about this time when I entered into a serious relationship with my fifth cousin once removed. This was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was my father's godson, but I had only met him a few times. At the time, he was a junior at Harvard when we met. I remember how we used to sit on his family's country house porch and read poetry to each other. He invited me to dances and football games at Harvard, and we wrote love letters to each other almost daily.
We obviously know that he's the one you married, but how did he propose?
We went to Massachusetts to visit my brother. He was at a boarding school at the time. That's when Franklin proposed. When he told me that he loved me and asked me to marry him, I did not hesitate to say yes, for I knew that I loved him too. He told me that he was the happiest man in the world, but his mother was definitely not as happy. She didn't want any woman to replace her.
When and where did you get married? What was your wedding like?
We actually got married on St. Patrick's Day in 1905. My uncle, Theodore Roosevelt, the President of the United States at the time, walked me down the aisle.
How was married life?
I enjoyed being married, but I became the quiet, young society matron like I was expected, and looking back on it, I regret this.
How many children did you have?
I had 5 boys, but unfortunately one died when he was an infant. I also had one girl who I named Anna after my mother. Because my childhood was so bad, though, I wasn't quite sure how to act as a mother. The maids did most of the work with my children.
When did your husband enter into politics?
In 1910, Franklin became the New York State Senator. At this time, I was beginning to get interested in human beings, and I found that almost everyone had something interesting to contribute to my education. 3 years after Franklin became senator, we moved to Washington, D.C., because he became the Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Wilson. World War I also began around this time.
There were rumors that Franklin had a mistress. Were these rumors true?
Yes, unfortunately they were. In 1918, I found love letters in his bag from his secretary, Lucy Mercer. I offered him divorce, but his advisors were strongly against this idea. He ended the affair and asked for my forgiveness. I did forgive him, but our marriage was never the same. I could forgive, but I could never forget.
When did Franklin develop polio, and how did this affect you?
This is a time I will never forget. In 1921, while we were on vacation in Camp Bello Island, Franklin developed a high fever and couldn't stand or move his legs. We called the doctor who diagnosed him with polio. Franklin was paralyzed from the waist down and never stood or walked again without leg braces. Franklin's mother, Sarah, wanted him to retire because of this, but I was strongly against this idea. Franklin's illness made me stand on my own 2 feet in regard to my husband's life, my own life, and my children's training.
Franklin obviously went back into politics. When was this, and how did he start back up?
After Franklin was diagnosed with polio, he went back into practicing law, but by 1928, he was bored of this. He decided to run for governor of New York and won once again. Franklin's illness proved to be a blessing in disguise, for it gave him strength and courage he had never had before. He had to think of the fundamentals of living and learn the greatest of all lessons, infinite patience and never-ending persistence. At this time, I began traveling and started working 4 days a week teaching literature, drama, and American history at an all-girls school. At this time, I also became politically active in the state of New York and in the Democratic Party.
When did Franklin decide to run for president, and how did his presidency affect you?
Franklin ran for president in 1932 and won. We moved into the White House, and immediately people started commenting that I was different from other first ladies. I was the first lady to drive my own car, and the Secret Service really annoyed me. I simply can't imagine being afraid of going among Americans, as I always have and always will. I was also the first lady to fly across the country. This was on a regular passenger flight, and I didn't have any aides or assistants with me. This surprised many people, but it didn't bother Franklin at all.
Once Franklin was president, did being in the spotlight ever bother you?
No, I actually enjoyed talking to the press. I was one of the first ladies to speak with the press. Each week I held a press conference and told the press whatever was on my mind, but only women were allowed in. Sometimes I said things which I thoroughly understood were likely to cause unfavorable comment in some quarters, and perhaps the newspaper women thought I should keep them off the record. I made these statements on purpose. I wanted to arouse controversy and get people to start thinking about the topics I found important, such as sweatshops, child labor laws, and decent working conditions. In 1936, I even started writing my own newspaper column. I also talked on radio shows much like this and wrote hundreds of magazine articles urging women to get involved in politics. Many people thought I talked too much and was too involved with politics, but I didn't care.
What was your role as First Lady?
When I was First Lady, I did most of the traveling and inspecting because Franklin was unable to because he could not walk. I would travel around the country checking working conditions and federal relief programs. I also visited impoverished coal mining towns and reported back to Franklin. I reported back my adventures from the day to Franklin, who would listen and then make changes as he saw fit. This included using federal money to build houses and schools. I became, as the years went by, a better reporter and a better observer. I found myself obliged to notice everything.
Didn't you do some work to help fight for African Americans' rights?
Yes. Through traveling, I saw how unfairly African Americans were treated. When a person holds deep prejudice, he gets to dislike the object of his prejudice. He uses it as an excuse for the fact that there is something unworthy in himself. I was strongly opposed to racial inequality and felt that any organization that treated African Americans unfairly did not deserve my support or the support of the country. I gave speeches against segregation in the South and recommended desegregating the armed forces. One of my greater accomplishments was fighting to successfully open the Army Nurse Corps to African American women.
What was your role during the war?
During the war, I traveled to the bases. I wanted to raise morale and let the soldiers know that they were loved and appreciated. I also inspected Navy and Army hospitals, checking to make sure they were being run properly and meeting with soldiers and patients. I was often frustrated with what I saw. If we don't make this a more decent world to live in, I don't see how we can look these boys in the eyes. They're going to fight their handicaps all their lives, and what for if the world is the same cruel, stupid place?
When did Franklin die?
Franklin died in 1945, a year after he was reelected for the third time. After his death, I had a few definite plans, but I knew that there were certain things I did not want to do. I did not want to run an elaborate household again. I did not want to cease trying to be useful in some way. I did not want to feel old, and I seldom have.
What did you do after you moved out of the White House?
I became a board member of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. President Truman also asked me to be a U.S. delegate to the United Nations, and I helped write the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that was adopted in 1948. This was one of the most wonderful and worthwhile experiences of my life. I was still fighting for human rights across the world and civil rights in the U.S.
As you got older, were you always this involved?
Yes, I kept myself pretty busy. John F. Kennedy reappointed me to the United Nations, and I continued traveling all over the world. My children and friends were constantly telling me to slow down, but I didn't know how. I have never been bored, never found the days long enough for the range of activities with which I wanted to fill them. I believed in working hard and not giving up until you achieve your goals.
Thank you so much for your time, Eleanor. I know I speak for all the listeners when I say it's been a pleasure talking with one of America's most fascinating women.